Okay.
I said I worked 23 innings behind the plate one night in Minnesota. And we got back to the hotel. I was about dead. Next morning, 7 o'clock, the phone rang. And this guy said, "Where are you guys?" I said, "Did you see the game last night? We were supposed to play golf next morning." He said, "You guys are supposed to be here at Country Club last night." I said, "Look at the paper, you dumb SOB." So what I mean is just he had no idea that we went 23 innings. But I thought I never was going to get out of there. Man, I'm telling you. Every pitcher came in, no matter who it was, he pitched like Cy Young.
Were you behind the plate, or were you at one of the other bases?
Yeah, behind the plate.
Oh, gosh. How do you stay focused for 23 innings?
Not easy, I promise you. it's tough. I worked behind Nolan Ryan a lot of times, you know, a ton of times. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of speaking engagements over the country. And I have a question and answer session at the end. And the first question they always ask me, how did you call Nolan Ryan's ball coming out at 105, 106 miles an hour? I just tell them if it sounds good, I call it a strike, you know.
So tell me about how your love affair with the game of baseball started.
Well, I tell you what, I was a freshman in high school, 14 years old. And my high school coach was also the elementary coach, eighth grade coach. And he had several eighth grade games, and the umpires would maybe want to show up, maybe neither one. He asked me if I wanted to do it, and I said, yeah. He gave me $5 a game, but in 1956, that was pretty good money. And I'd get 2 a week, and then basketball was the same thing. But I got into enjoying umpiring those games, and when I got out of high school, I just kept it up. I just kept going, and I got into working small college and a big college, and then I worked the Appalachian League before I went to school, and then the next year I went to school, and Jim McKean and I came out first in our class, and I started out in the Florida State League, which I understand it takes you 2 or 3 years to get there now, but I went to Florida State, the Carolina, the Southern League, and then I spent 1 year in each league, and then I went to AAA, American Association. I was there for 1.5 years, and I worked the All-Star game and the playoffs, each one of those. I was just lucky back then, and I worked hard at it. But when I got AAA, I stayed there 1.5 years. I went up during the year, and I was there 27 years.
So when you were in the minors, do you get reimbursed for your hotels, or is that out of your own paycheck, or how does travel work for umpires compared to the players riding on the bus?
Well, umpires, somebody had to drive. One of the guys, a 2-man crew, one of the guys had to drive, you know? Mm-hmm. And you got like, I don't know what the number was, but you say 15, half of that was for your hotels and your gas, supposedly. So, believe me, it wasn't easy.
Did you have to pay for your own food, too, or did you go to a clubhouse?
They gave us a hot dog or something at the game, minor league, but it wasn't much. Wasn't much at all, in fact.
So, do umpires and sort of fall by the wayside that don't want to live that life, or is everyone sort of motivated, back in those days, motivated to get to the bigs?
Oh, everybody wants to go to the bigs. I mean, big league's the only place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you make good money, and they fly you first class and give you per diem and all that stuff. It's big league's the place to be. It don't matter if you're a trainer or whatever you are.
So you ascended pretty quickly in the minors to, you know, being a major league up in your early 30s. Who keeps an eye on you or back then and other minor league umpires back in the 60s and early 70s to see, you know, what kind of job you're doing and if you're major league?
Well, they have each league has a supervisor. He'll come down and usually visit your games, and most time you won't know it. And that's the way they do it there. But in the big league, they've got an umpire supervisor that moves around all the time, checks on people. If they catch you, if they think you're not hustling or not moving around like you should, they'll be on you. I don't blame them.
Did you do winter league games, too, back in the 60s or out-of-the-country games?
In the 70s, it was I worked Puerto Rico, Venezuela, and Dominican. But I was lucky in the minor leagues. I worked the All-Star game in the playoffs every league I was in.
So you get to the majors. Do you remember the first game you were umpired and what?
Oh, yeah.
Which one, what position you were at?
This is going to be kind of ugly. I'm on tape, but I'm going to tell you, Gaylord Perry pitched the first game I umpired behind the plate in Texas, playing Milwaukee. He was throwing that greaser because he knew as a rookie, and he was going straight down like it's supposed to, and they were raising Cain and bitching. And about the third inning, I went out there and I said, "Hey, farmer." He was a cotton farmer from South Carolina. I said, "Farmer, why are you doing that ball?" I said, "Everybody knows." He said, "Dale, I'm going to tell you the truth." He said, "I'm greasing up every fucking pitch." He said, "I've got my jock full. Do you want to check it?" Now, what do you think? I didn't have much of an answer for him. I said, "Please, just throw it when you need a strike." I said, "You're going to make me run out of the game. This is my first plate job."
But, so along those lines, given, you know, people were like, you know, say Mike Scott was scuffing and things like that, is that just something that you all just kind of ignore unless it's blatantly obvious or they have a file in the back of their pants?
Any profanity directed to you directly to you personally, you dump them. I mean, that's automatic. And if you yell by, you know, argue balls and strikes and make a big deal out of that, that's automatic. And if a manager comes out, dug out on balls and strikes, he's done.
So there's no exact micromanaging between with pitchers or hitters trying to gain, you know, just slight advantages?
No. I'll tell you something. It's on tape, I know that, but I've never seen a big league pitcher, especially, and a lot of batters. If I knew them all, knew what they're doing. But they all, every one of them, cheated one way or another. Some way they cheat. I'm telling you, you wouldn't believe it, but they do. And that's the way it is. They get the edge. And it was good for me. I had a good time. I had a good career. And I worked 2 World Series, 2 All-Star games, and I think it's 16, 17 playoffs. And, you know, that's not bad for a country boy, no sense.
So, of course, everyone wants to ask you, I'm sure, about the 1986 World Series. At what point in Game 6 do you become a fan rather than an umpire, or do you just have to lock in? Is history sort of going before your eyes?
Yeah, you never become a fan, or I never did yet. I don't think anybody does when you get to that level, because they screen those guys out in the minor league. They don't. You got guys that go to AAA, and all of a sudden they top out. You know, no, they don't get any better, so they just send them home. But that's a good, and a lot of times they'll do that because they get to liking a team or getting maybe even pull a little bit subconsciously for a team and. First thing you know, they're home.
So, in your mind, when you were doing the game, and especially when there got to be 2 outs and then 2 strikes, you're like, "I'm about ready to go home." Or did you really think that the Mets might have a chance?
You mean in that World Series?
Yeah, Game 6.
I thought the Red Sox had one. They did too. In fact, they had everything in the clubhouse covered up, so. Wouldn't get the beer and the champagne on them. And, of course, they got beat there. And of course, I didn't think Bill Buckner should have been in there because Bill, he was kind of crippled, you know. He couldn't get around.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, of course, Mookie Wilson went down the line like a cat and scored that winning run. And, you know, nothing to me just walk off because it was all over.
And, of course, you were also behind the plate during one of the most memorable baseball incidents, especially for people of my younger generation. I'm in my mid-30s of, you know, all of us love Nolan Ryan.
Robin Ventura.
Yeah. What made Ventura snap to that level? I know he threw at him, but...
I want to say it from... Robin Ventura is the most unlikely person in the league to do that. He's one of the nicest guys I ever saw. But the week before, they played in Chicago, if you'll check it. And Robinson went either 4 or 5 for 5 against Nolan. So all the umpires, all the players, he was going to hit him sometime in that series. It just happened to hit him and not out of line of play. But they teach you, and he hit him in the leg just above the knee. And I'll tell you exactly what he said. He said, "I knew that son of a bitch was going to hit me." I said, "Let me tell you something, Robin. Everybody in the ballpark is going to hit you." But they teach you in umpire school to walk between the batter and the pitcher to first base. And like I say, Robin's one of the greatest guys. He never thought he'd do that. But we got down about 2/3, and I said, "Robin, you going to be all right now? You going to first?" He said, "I'll be all right. I'll be all right." So I turn and go back to the plate, and I get back next to the plate, and I hear a commotion. I look back there at the mound, and Nolan Ryan's giving Robin Ventura about a dozen punches in the head there, and it was all over. But after the game, Chicago Riders came in, and wanted me to run. I said, "Why didn't you run?" Their guy, he was fighting. I said, "Look, I didn't think you'd run a guy out of the game being a better fighter. He didn't charge the mound, you know. He didn't charge the mound. And get out of here. Don't bother me." I ran him out. And they like to get a little bit. So like, sports writers like to get around behind a door or something, you know, where they can hear umpires talk, you know, might say something that, you know, that they could put out there in the paper and let people read it, that the umpire said this or that or the other. And he just hide and listen. You know what I mean? You got to be real careful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you, you're not the only umpire to have a lot of issues with Billy Martin. How did you handle him as best you could?
He wanted to run the game. He wanted to run everybody's game. And some guys were kind of intimidated by Billy. I'm going to tell you something. I'm a hillbilly. Hard-headed and pretty mean sometimes, they tell me, but I dumped him, I think it was 12 times during my career.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Billy, you're not going to run my game. You can sit in that dugout and yell, you ought to. That's the first time you come out, top that step, that's top step, you're done." And I said, "I'm tired of you." And it didn't matter who the umpire was. If it was me, it didn't matter who it was. He wanted to run the game, and he wanted to call balls and strikes, all that stuff. And I told him, "Next time you say something on balls and strikes, you're done. I don't care. Just take a choice." And I got him 12 times.
And I know Earl Weaver is another gentleman that's had some that, you know, that has had issues
Rooney
with about every umpire. I know you ejected him once before the national anthem. What did he say that time?
We called him Rooney. And he wanted to run the game too, and he had more mouth than Boar Hog does butt. But he, you asked me about the time I ran him when he was during the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened? I'll tell you when Weaver or Martin were in there, and really, really, really close play to go either way, they didn't get it. I promise you. So the night before at first base, he came out 4 times. Rooney did. And I said, "Rooney, you know, you think you can umpire better than I can? Just stay out here, and I'll go. I know I can manage better than you can, so I'll just go in there and manage." He said, "I'll be out here every time you don't give me a close call." I said, "No, you won't. When you see it, get to that door back there behind the dugout, just keep on trucking, because you're done for tonight."
How did you get that nickname?
Rooney, because he's about the size of Mickey Rooney.
Oh, okay.
Midget. But, next night he comes out to the plate, bring a lineup card. I've got this big balloon, that back when he used a balloon, and got this great big lady out between the mound and the plate to sing a national anthem. Now I've got that balloon under one arm, my hat over my heart, and my mask under the other elbow. And he's talking out of the right side of his mouth. He says, "Hey, Dale, how many plays are you going to screw up tonight?" And I'm talking about the other corner of my mouth. I said, "Don't matter, Rooney, because as soon as this lady's done, you are too." When it was over, she finally got through. He said, "Are you serious?" I said, "That's a heart attack. Get out of here." So about the second inning, what's the funniest thing about it, the second inning, John Miller and those guys from Broadcast Booth sent a note down by the bat boy, said, "Dale, where is Rooney?" I put one word. I said, "Guess." I looked up there, and they were going nuts. They loved it. I mean, they loved it. And one night, I was in Baltimore, and I was working third. And, of course, that was when Brooksy and Blander played. And Blander, they called him Blade. And his during the time between innings when they're throwing balls to first base, and it's about the fifth, sixth inning, and Brooks, he said, "Hey, come here." They call me the Rip. "Hey, come here, Rip." He said, "Run that little SOB." He said, "We're tired of listening to him, too." And Blender said, "Yeah, you don't have a hair. You know where if you don't." That's all I needed. I said, "Rooney," he was on the other end of there. "Rooney's what?" I said, "Get out of here." His eyes got about the size of a baseball. He came running out of the dugout, and he said, "You a big hillbilly." So and so, I know all these words, but it wasn't nice.
Are they still in the stairwell? Are managers usually still in the stairwell after that, still talking, or do you make sure they're down in the clubhouse?
Oh, I make sure they're gone. You can't see them. Yeah. I don't let them pitch till they're gone. But he said, "You're the only one I hadn't reeled at night." So what he did, he ran over, kicked third base, got loose, threw it in the stands, went to second, couldn't get it loose. Went to first, kicked it, got it loose, threw it in the stand, went back to second base, couldn't get it loose. He sat down like an Indian, folded his legs and arms. And one of my partners, Nick Brimigan, and I just picked him up and carried him in the sitting position to the dugout. And I'm telling you what, the fans were absolutely going nuts. They loved it. Both players, both dugouts were loving it. We took him over to the dugout, and we just jerked your arm out under his elbow. He hit his tailbone on the top step of the dugout. He said, "I'm going to sue you guys. You broke my tailbone." I said, "Put your feet down, dummy. You don't have to worry about it." And the players would love it. I mean, they just loved it. That's one of the things. If I were in the stand, I'd probably liked it too.
Well, speaking of other unique circumstances during your long career, are there any stories about fans running on the field or incidents with mascots or other things you had to deal with?
No, I never had any fans around the field or mascots. Because I tell you what, the mascot, I didn't put up with that a minute, because if they even looked at me, I'd run them out of the game and get them out of here. Because they like to show players and umpires up, but players don't like them either.
So would you say that growing up sort of a country lifestyle, you were grown to not put up with any crap?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. I'm the middle kid of 13. Do you believe that? I have 12 brothers and sisters.
Oh, so. Oh, okay. So how many of your older siblings were brothers?
I've got 7 brothers and 5 sisters.
Okay, so I take it your older brothers were rather tough on you then?
Oh, yeah, Lord, yeah. I didn't worry about Dad and Mom. My older brother beat the crap out of you. But I was tough as nails. I mean, I don't care to tell you, I had to grow up tough. We grew up on a farm, a little farm out in the country. We worked every day. We'd have a garden, mother can stuff all winter, and we'd have a 5-acre garden.
So you lived in Northeast Tennessee then too, right, growing up?
Yes, yes.
Oh, what town?
It's near Gray, between Jonesboro between Jonesboro and Kingsport.
Okay, so for listeners, that's in the northeast part and near East Tennessee State University.
Near Johnson City, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So during your career, can you talk about the evolution of the strike zone? Because that's always been at least sort of a confusion, at least for me anyway.
All the time I was in the big leagues, I didn't change my strike zone. It stayed the same. Even when they made us go from a balloon to the inside protector, I had no problem. I started working on my knee, and Lord, that stabilized you, and it's almost impossible to miss a pitch. Only way you can miss a pitch is if you get your timing's too quick.
So, what do you think about the chance of computers possibly taking over your job and, or not your job, but umpires' jobs in general and telling you balls and strikes in your ear?
I don't think that could happen, because if that ball comes through the strike zone, no matter how many times it bounces, it's going to be called a strike. And the replay is the biggest farce baseball ever came up with. In fact, they did a survey when I was in the big league. They said we were right 98.9% of the time. And now your game goes on about 4 hours at least, because you got all these replays and stuff. And in fact, people thought when I was umpiring, when Billy Martin, Earl Weaver, Ralph Houck, all those guys come on the field, that was entertainment. You know, they loved that. The fans did. Now they got to sit there and wait on the replay. And the thing about the replay is the, you know, that little square they got on the plate.
Mm-hmm.
The center field camera is 550 feet away from home plate, 30 feet in the air. It's got to be over to one side of the catcher or pitcher or the other, because it don't get the pitcher's back side all the time. And the one behind the plate up over the plate has to get a bad angle too, one side or the other, because guys like Rick Henderson used to bend over, you know, hunch over the plate, all to get the back of his head. What I'm saying, they got to have an angle, and that angle throws it off a little bit. People, they don't tell people that. That's the way it is.
Now, what do you do when, well, you're at obviously the elite level when catchers frame pitches. Do you, would you have a word with them or just let him do it and call it as he saw it?
I'll tell you how I handle it. I still handle it that way. The first time I see a catcher, I'll tell him, hey, look, I'm going to tell you how it works. Don't move the mitt. If you do, it's going to be a ball because my timing's slow. Yeah, I said, don't hold it. All you have to do is play catch with the pitcher. I'll take care of everything else. And I promise you, if it's a strike or close, I'm going to ring it up. But now if you move that mitt, I'm going to ball it. Because when you move that mitt, that tells me and everybody else in the ballpark that you didn't think it was a strike either. If you did, you wouldn't move the mitt. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, also, as you see, go on.
Pardon?
I said, go on. I didn't realize I interrupted you.
But, that's the way I handled that and got along fine. And I still do it. If I work high school, first time I see a kid, hey, don't you even think about moving that mitt.
So these days, after every pitch, hitters have to go outside of the box, readjust their gloves, readjust their pants, all that. The pitchers have to stand there for 20 or 30 seconds. Do umpires have any recourse to speeding the game up? And back in your day, how did you speed the game up, or was that even an issue?
Call a ball on the batter. Call a ball on the batter because the pitcher wants to go around. You got 20 seconds to throw it. Nobody on base, but if a coach out of the dugout is calling pitches, send him into the catcher. I mean, he's got to do it right now. I mean, like I had a guy 15 seconds, a couple times, I told him. I said, look, if you're going to call those signals in, next time it takes 10 seconds, it's a ball on the batter. I'll tell you one thing. He speeds up right now. And in high school, the rule is, unless there's something unusual happens, like a pitcher knock you down, you got to keep 1 foot in the batter's box in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But in the big leagues, you don't. But I'll tell you what, if I tell them to get in the box and they want to give me some lip, guess what that first pitch is? If it's in the neighborhood.
Well, who ultimately would you say is extending these games? Do the umpires union not have any recourse versus this? Or
no, it's the replay that is making the game 4 hours every day. And I'll tell you what, that's the biggest complaint about baseball from Little League all the way to the big league. It's time of game.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's where I'm coming from.
So you talked about after your career, obviously you still give back to the game as an umpire. Talk about some of the, I know you do high school and college, but what else some of the things you've done?
Well, I was state representative for three terms. Sitting around, it's anywhere from 2 to 10 hours, or 12 hours sometimes. I stayed there three terms, and I got a lot of things done, like water out in the country, utility water. Got a lot of roads done up in the back country, and that's what I did for a while, and did things like, and I tell you what, I'm more proud of anything else. It's my, since I retired, my wife and I have done 317 benefit dinners for people that had burnout or bad luck, some kind of house burned down, and they had a debt in the family, or a lot of medical bills. And we make anywhere from four, we make 21,000 one night, but we make it usually it's right around, average around $7,000, which is not a lot of money, but it is if you don't have any.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I'm proud of that. We work, that's hard work. I've done that. Pay for all the, somebody asked me who pays for the groceries. Well, I do, because a man right now can buy a grocery. He don't need any financial help.
Yeah. Well, I could see why you would be successful at that, because you seem like quite the raconteur and storyteller.
Right. No, I don't. Like I said, I do all kinds of speaking engagements, and I work a lot of basketball games at UT Chattanooga. That's back when I was in the big leagues.
Back when they were baseball, or were you doing basketball there?
Yeah, I was doing basketball there. Worked a lot of games there.
Was this before your career in the majors, or?
Pardon?
Was this before your career in the majors, or were you doing basketball? Were you doing basketball in the winters too?
Yeah, I did winter.
Oh wow! So you didn't get like any time off then?
No, I didn't. I didn't need any time off back then. But, I tell you what, I had a good career. I tell you that, and I can't complain about a thing. But I'm 80 years old. And I'm still working baseball games. I've been blessed with good health. You have to be blessed with good health if you're going to do that. You know, at that age.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, anyway, it's about 100 to 105 degrees outside with goodness knows what the heat index is. Talk about any games you had where, especially maybe in St. Louis or Cincinnati, especially on the turf where it gets to be about 120 or 130 on the surface. How do you start hydrating before the game? Do you take salt tablets, or how do you survive it? I guess would be the question.
I tell you what, the toughest place I worked was Texas, Dallas. It would be 115 when you go on the field, and I'm telling you right now, if you were trying to play by the second inning, you're drenched. You just hang with it. That's what I do. Hang with it. So I'm in the hospital. That's all you can do. But I'm trying a hard job. I don't think it's a hard job if you work hard at it. It becomes a lot easier, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be easy.
Well, I really do appreciate you taking the time for the oral interview, and it will be uploaded probably in the next week on SABR, and I will send you a link, or I will let you know when it gets up there.
Okay. I'll come to chat.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, and I'll let the people much higher up than me know.
The governor used to send me out to speak for him. I went one time. This